This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the October 7th edition of the DRF Players Podcast, being broadcast live for the first time in a little bit of an experiment. Welcome to anybody who is joining us via the magic of Spreaker and the various social media accounts. We have this thing logged or hooked up to, I guess I should say. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you alongside the usual crew. We've got quite a weekend of Breeders' Cup prep races from the DRF offices in Manhattan. On my right, Mr. Mike Hogan.
Pete, glad to be here.
And once again, in his unusual setup, folks who remember Wolfman Jack from back in the 1960s may recognize the way that Jonathan Kitchen chooses to broadcast. He boards a private plane. It circles around Austin. And I guess it just puts you in the right headspace, JK, so you can give out winner after winner on here. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I don't feel like myself unless I'm on an airplane. So,
any turbulence today? How are the skies over there?
No, there's no turbulence. If there's turbulence, I'm getting off. As much as I fly, I don't prefer turbulence.
We've got a lot of races to talk about today, guys. I think, you know, we will cover all the races that are part of the Public Handicapper contest. Encourage everybody to get involved at publichandicapper.com. If you're not already, it's a great way to stay involved with the races all year long, as well as win fabulous prizes. And there are only three Public Handicapper contests each year. We are coming towards the end of the biggest one, the Public Handicapper Challenge. That reminds me, I should probably do a little update for DRF at some point about who's doing well in that. Two NHC seats will be awarded out of that. But even though you can't start at the beginning of a contest right now, there are also weekly and monthly prizes on PH. It's definitely something you want to be checking out. And then shortly after the Breeders' Cup, another contest will be starting. Very good stuff from our friend and sometimes podcast guest, Scott Carson, over there at Public Handicapper. Usually those are the four races we focus on. A weekend like this, there's just too much going on to only focus on those races. So rather than go in-depth on four races and move some other segments along with us in the show, what we're going to do is just go over, not in a cursory way, but just give our quick thoughts on all the important stakes races at both Keeneland and Belmont. We're going to start off at Keeneland with the Grade 3 Woodford. Now, this is one of the Public Handicapper races, right?
It is.
So, yeah, we're going to start with that one, 3:25 Eastern time tomorrow. It's a Grade 3, 5.5 on the turf. For me, I was excited about this race. I don't know that I can come up with the winner, but I can tell you a couple horses that I'm going to want to be betting against. Mike, you had an interesting statistic, I believe, about one of those horses that I see as a bet against in here, number 12, Mongolian Saturday. What was that number?
Well, you know, I mean, obviously, look, this is your Breeders' Cup turf sprint winner, and clearly this is a prep for that race down the hill at Santa Anita in a few weeks. So, you know, and sure, he's won this race, or he's won on Keeneland turf before, but he was kind of the world traveler after that win. Didn't really acquit himself all that well in a lot of those races, but that's fine. He maybe was up against it a little bit. Now comes back to the U.S., makes his first start in a few months, and trainer Anibish Ganbat, is that how you pronounce it?
Sounds good to me.
He, obviously this is his big horse, and I'm sure he wants him to run well. This trainer's not really an off-the-layoff trainer, just 2 for 38 in the last 5 years, 59-cent ROI with those runners. Of course, one of those off-the-layoff wins was Mongolian Saturday himself, but that was back in 2014. At a short price, he's the name horse. He's the one I'd be likely to bet against in here. Just if he's good enough to beat me, then he's probably close to a super horse.
Is there anyone in particular, Mike, you'd nominate as a candidate to beat him, or you're still at this point you're just more focused on who you're going to be betting against?
Well, it's a pretty wide open race, really. I mean, we covered it yesterday in the handicapping session with Byron and Marty, and I think the agreement of the whole panel was play against a few favorites that might be a little vulnerable, particularly Mongolian Saturday and Undrafted, and then try and get as deep as you can with all the rest of them. I think, obviously, Mosler has a huge shot for Bill Mott. He's a little light on the buyer figures, but that's a horse that seemingly always runs a good race. And if he takes the Keeneland Turf, he's a player at probably a square price. The one that interests me the most from a price standpoint, and he's another that's going to have to improve, is a horse named Showgood, number 5 for Scott Becker. He's just a 3-year-old, so he's somewhat lightly raced. He's improving, but he never runs a bad race. And the one time he ran on turf, it was a good one, and he actually beat a horse he's going to face in here in Mongol Bull, who I think is probably one of the players as well.
Looking at pace figures, Jonathan, Showgood might have that angle that I know you like in these turf sprints of the absolute speed of the speed. Is that a place that you're looking to go in here, or do you have another idea?
Well, my ultimate pick is going to be from a little bit off forward, but a little bit off. But if you're playing the pick 5, if you're playing the pick 6, if you're playing, I don't care what you're playing, if you do not use the 1 and the 5 in this spot, at least defensively, it's a mistake. Keeneland's 5.5 turf sprint, it feels like there more than anywhere else, you get these horses that are just kind of weird horses that you might not have found anyways at Wire the Field. I feel like it happens in every race that they run there. And I feel like a couple of times I've been on the good side of it. So those are two horses I would definitely use defensively. But for me, I want Allsvid. I think the horse is classy. I've always liked the horse. I thought the horse's race and the turf sprint on Derby Day was impressive. He was finishing well. That was, the second or third time that they had run him on the turf. And I really like that horse moving forward, especially in this spot. Undrafted is a horse that I guarantee will be in the exacta in the turf sprint at Santa Anita, but I don't think I want him here going 5.5 and what I think everyone would agree is a prep race. But it's Allsvid for me, but I would use the 1 and the 5 defensively. I'm against Mongolian Saturday as well.
Yeah, I'm against those favorites. I like Allsvid. I was going to probably throw Almasti into the mix, the number 3 horse as well here, who I think could get an excellent trip, maybe just in behind that speed as well. So let's move on to the 6th race at Keeneland. It's the Thoroughbred Club of America, a grade 2. Now, Jonathan, anytime the best horse in the race has a pace advantage, I pretty much know who you're going to pick. So should we just say Stonetastic and move on?
No, I actually have a hate relationship with Stonetastic.
Describe.
My first Breeders' Cup betting challenge, I had $2,000 left, and Bobby's Kitten was the race after this, and I didn't feel like – I thought Bobby's Kitten was going to get bet down to like 4-1. I didn't feel like 4-1 times 2,000 was going to be enough, so I did something very stupid that I'll never do again. I bet $2,000 to show on Stonetastic to try to get a little bit more money, and then I was going to bet it all on Bobby's Kitten, and she obviously didn't show. That's why I hate her, and I'll never forgive her for that. But
hater, isn't that a strong word?
Well, hate her as much as you can hate a beautiful four-legged animal. But yeah, as much as you can hate her, I hate her that much.
Where are you gonna go instead?
Bendable for me. Jose Ortiz obviously has been running lights out, and when Mandela puts one on the plane, he means business. And this horse was impressive in her last race. She's been impressive this summer. She lost to or she beat the gray filly. I'm going blank on her name now.
Enola Gray.
Right. Enola Gray beat her and I with those two combinations there, I think the horse will get a good trip. It feels like Stonetastic is. It feels like she's better at 7. I mean, I know she won by 6 last time, going 6, but that she was 2-5. She's supposed to win by 6. So Bendable for me, I think you'll get a little bit of value there. She hasn't really proven herself yet. And like I said, it's Mandela putting one on the plane is not common for him. And it's a good sign for me.
You know, the last time he won at Keeneland, or actually in Kentucky at all?
I was going to say Beholder, but she didn't win there.
No, she ran 2nd.
When was the last time he won? I have no clue. You'll know.
It was 2004.
But I mean, how many starts are we?
Sorry, 2000. I think maybe it was 2007. Anyway, yeah, it was only 11 starts. Yeah. He's had 11 runners in the state of Kentucky. So this is just not something he normally does. We talked about it a little bit on the session yesterday. This is probably a Claiborne call.
Sure, you know, they right down the road. I mean, it's trainers will definitely tend to put horses in different places or do different things when they have different owners. So this makes perfect sense to me as part of the Claiborne-Mandela relationship. And also, Marty pointed out on that seminar yesterday, and I second Mike's emotion that folks should check that out, drf.com/YouTube, the jockey booking of Jose Ortiz seems just really notable and interesting. So there's a lot of I get where you're going with that, Jonathan.
I noted another thing, too. You know Ortiz's record at Keeneland?
I don't.
He's 0-for-8 with 1 second, but he's got a lot of live mounts both today
change.
On opening day tomorrow. Next, yeah, that'll change.
Over the course of today and tomorrow, I have a feeling that that bagel will no longer be extant. But let me ask you this, Jonathan. When you're taking on a horse like Stonetastic as part of it, when you go through PPs and you can see not one but 2 defeats at 30 cents on the dollar, does that – I mean, you're kind of joking around that it's sort of an anti-sentimental play against Stonetastic. But, I mean, do you see some real handicapping reasons here to be against her as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to speculate, but it feels like she might be an ouchie horse anyway. She seems like she's always, you know, coming off of these long breaks. I feel like every time I bet her, she's coming off a layoff and I think some of her biggest performances, the ones that made people kind of know who she is as a filly, she was with the track, you know, speed favoring days where she got to the inside and went on with it. So she's just, you know, I've seen her lose when she has perfect situations at 2-5 way too many times to bet her with any confidence.
Mike Hogan, how about you? Where are you going to end up here?
I'm generally with you guys about being skeptical about Stonetastic at a short price. You know, she may just be good enough to outrun all of them. But there's some other early speed in here. And, you know, granted, she's only run there a couple times, but Keeneland doesn't seem like it's her best surface. So I'm happily playing against her at a short price. The one I'd probably lean on most is probably going to be the second choice. So it's not, unless Bendable takes some money, so it's not like I'm getting crazy here. But I think number one, Irish Jasper is a filly who's starting to get good after being quite good last year as a 3-year-old. She's in the Brown Barn now. She maybe didn't run so well in the first couple starts with him, and then he laid her off a little bit. I think she's starting to get good now. This is her third start as a 4-year-old. I think she gets a great trip here. If Stonetastic backs up, I would absolutely expect it to be Irish Jasper that takes advantage.
A little bit of an interesting situation when evaluating the pace of this race, because when you look at running styles, I think Mike's point is correct. There's plenty who like to run forward. When you look at pace figures, Stonetastic appears to have this super advantage. So we'll have to see how that plays out on the racetrack. But I do like Mike's thought of Irish Jasper as potentially the one in here with the most finish. So
That's true. One thing I'll note about Stonetastic, whether or not there's other pace, she sometimes is vulnerable to do like she did in that Parks race 2 back, where if you look at the pace, I mean, even if you just look at the fractions, it's ridiculous. But you look at the pace figures, a plus 27 Moss pace figure for the first call, 108. I mean, even if she's not pressed, she has a history of just running off and kind of slitting her own throat. So
let's move on to the first lady. Obviously, this is the return to the races of Teppan. There's been a lot of chatter in horse racing Twitter about the showdown between Celestine and Teppan. Mike, which side of that showdown do you fall on?
Teppan. I mean, look, if you're leaning against Teppan, you're hoping that maybe this isn't the spot. This is just a prep. She maybe bounces in the second start off the layoff. But everything I saw a horse that maybe wasn't completely cranked last out, yet she still beat a field of decent grade one males in a $1 million race on a track she'd never run before. She had a little bit of trouble there. She still won. Maybe she wasn't her most impressive race, but I absolutely expect her to take a step forward here. And anything but a C-level race here wins this. I think with Celestine, you've got a horse who is consistent, but maybe not on Teppan's level. She ran a huge race last time. They had a little bit of an issue with her. Belmont had to back off. She missed about 5 weeks of work. So you have to hope that she's going to repeat that last effort. And then Tepin maybe takes a step back as well. It's too much to hope for me. I think betting against Tepin is like betting against the San Francisco Giants in an even numbered year.
I like getting that little dig in there at me, Michael. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, you know, no problem.
JK, what do you think? Is this a two-horse race or is it a one-horse race?
You know, one of the things I like to do is when a horse gets a really big figure is, and we've talked about this before on seminars and podcasts, I like to go back and see what horses do out of that race other than that horse to identify whether or not that figure was real or not. And depending on what figures you look at, seven of the horses in Celestine's last race have come back to run equal to or better than the figure that they received in that race, which tells me that the number is real. And if that number is real, then she's competitive in this spot. With all of that said, Tepin's going to improve off of her last race. She loves Keeneland. And when Belmont, off of a break with a horse that had an issue, is not a horse that I want to challenge, one of the best turf horses we've ever seen in this country. You know, so take it at your own risk. But for me, it's going to be 100% play through Tepin. And if she loses, I lose. You know, Celestine's one of those horses that I think it happens very often when there's a huge favorite and then there's the second most likely and the only other horse that people can envision winning. That horse typically goes off at shorter odds than they actually should be considering the situation. And I think we saw that last week with Ecto or whatever. Like, he was 10-1. And yes, when you can find a 10-1 shot, congratulations to you. But the horse should have been 30-1 in that race. And you trick yourself into thinking you're getting value, and I just don't always think that's the case.
A little bit of Chris Larmy trolling going on there. I don't know if you heard me on the big show this week, but I was the
My Twitter's going to blow up today.
Yeah, well, we're doing this live. If Larmy is awake at 6:39 on the West Coast and happens to be listening in, maybe he'll even just mid show start trolling you.
Chris is the best, and we did get a little too deep in the weeds on Ecto the other day, and I appreciated my friend Frank Scatoni calling us out, saying, you guys do realize you've spent half the day tweeting about Ecto, with an exclamation point, which I thought was sort of the definitive word on it, and yet here we are a few days later still talking about it. The horse that I just wanted to mention, and listener Andrew Wright, sent in his thought on the race, which was a Tepin Onis Cold Exacta. You know, I could see just a world in which I take 5% of my multi-race play, just the tiniest little nibble on Onis. If Celestine and Tepin happen to go too fast, if something really strange is going to happen, Onis is the one, if you said pick somebody else or pick somebody to play hard underneath in second and third behind Tepin, more likely in exactas and tries. I like Onis as a vertical candidate in this race. So I just wanted to mention that one. And thanks to Andrew for the prompt on it. Either of you guys have anything to say on Onis?
Yeah, I agree. I think Onis, from a value standpoint, I like Onis a lot better than I like Celestine, because I think Jonathan's right. People that are going to try and play against Tepin are going to land on Celestine, and she might be 3-1 in this spot, which is probably a little bit of an underlay in my opinion. So horses like Onis, who similar to Celestine in a way, always runs her race with the exception of maybe the yielding turf courses. She's not going to get that here. On firm turf, this horse is close to the top of, certainly not Tepin, but she's one of the better turf fillies out there on firm turf, in my opinion, and I wouldn't underestimate her.
Let's move on to the Breeders' Futurity. Jonathan, we'll start with you on this grade one. Is any part of you upset that your horse, not this time, has chosen to skip this spot and head straight to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile?
No, I'm fine with it. The less races, the better. I just want to get him in the gate so I can hedge against him if I have to. So I just want to get him in the gate for the Derby. But the other Romans is interesting to me. I mean, that horse, you know, I hearing Dale talk, he's talked well about the horse. Obviously, the horse is well-bred. And if you just take a look down, you'll remember Life at 10 was a pretty good racehorse herself. So I'm interested there. And so there's a lot of my play will happen in surrounding him just because I feel like the price on the horse I think is going to win is just not going to be something that I'm going to take part in. But Classic Empire, I think, is the most likely winner. Adding Blinkers, that horse's race on Derby week at Churchill. If you haven't seen it, it's a fun. No. The one before that on.
The debut.
Yeah, he missed the break and come running late. It was pretty impressive. So it's a fun one to watch. And then the Bashford Manor was impressive. And then, you know, he had the issue last time. And, apparently he's had.
Yeah.
He's got blinkers on now. And from what I've heard, he's been working well with those blinkers. Seems to have a new focus about him. And I just think he's just too fast for these other, you know, these horses just on figures. So he's one that I would definitely think's the most likely and I would use. But I think the other Romans is a very interesting horse, and he's one that I'd use as well.
This, for me, is a perfect example to put the theory to the test about betting against these, you know, one-turn, high-figure horses going two turns. I mean, you might be right. Classic Empire easily could be the most talented of these, but I think there's enough reason stretching out to take a shot against. And the place I wanted to land was number 7, Holiday Bonus, for Graham Motion, who has the two-turn experience from the sapling. You notice right away the Lasix and blinkers on for Motion going up in class, going up into this grade one. It just made – I mean, it's not a huge sample, but I did do a little formulator on that, and it turns out adding both Lasix and blinkers, Motion 3 for 13 with a 216 ROI. I also thought very interesting that of those three horses, great thing about formulator, not only do you just see the numbers, you can go back and look at the actual horses and how they ran. One of them was a wire-to-wire winner, as you might expect, but that was on a very slow-looking pace. The other two actually closed, and I thought that was a good thing because I figure with all these one-turn horses stretching out, pace is going to probably be pretty fast here, and I like the idea of picking one who I think has some finish. I could be all wet with this one, but I want to take a shot with number 7, Holiday Bonus. Mike, what did you come up with in here?
Well, I'm with you, Pete. I think the bet against of the day at Keeneland on Saturday is number 11, Classic Empire.
Wow, bet against of the day. That's strong.
Yes. Yes. I mean, look, he may just be a super horse. And if you go based on that slop debut, then, you know, and you want to bet a horse that did that at 4.5 furlongs, you want to bet him at 8.5 furlongs at what, 5 to 2, 2 to 1, maybe even lower, whatever he's going to be. Then by all means, do so. Please do so. The horse that ran second in that one is still a maiden. I don't know if that's the best field that they carded at Churchill at that meet. You look at the siblings. He's got 3 siblings, all of whom are multiple winners. They've won, something like 25% of their races combined. They only one of the 3 out of 80-something races combined even tried a route. I just don't see it going 8.5 furlongs with a horse that clearly has some head issues. You got to hope and wish that talent carries to 8.5 furlongs at the shortest price that you're going to see in a race that I think is very wide open. Please bet Classic Empire.
Jonathan, I got to let you rebut this one.
I get it. I mean, I get his argument. You know, I mean, he's a short price horse and he's trying new things, blah, 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 blah. But when I look through, I think a lot of people, they'll look through the PPs and they'll come up with ideas. They'll try to pick something that's like, oh, well, I could see that horse winning, or, oh, I can see that horse could improve. And I just don't like taking – I don't like – if I think a horse is the best horse in the field, I'm tempted – and maybe it's a thing I need to do better at, but I'm tempted just to lean in that direction rather than trying to get creative and pick some situation that I don't feel great about. And these – none of these horses are really that impressive to me, you know. I mean, and there, a lot of them are stretching out. The ones that make me interested are stretching out as well, you know. So, I mean, he's right. I get what he's saying. It's not typically smart to take a crazy horse, adding blinkers, stretching out at 5 to 2, drawing the 11 hole in a 12, 13 horse field. I can't argue with him. But if I single that horse, while everyone else is trying to get creative, then I'm smarter.
Yeah, you can get some equity that way if you end up being right about it. The other one I want to mention in this race is and Marty McGee put him right on top in his picks and in the webinar we did yesterday. Interested in number 9, No Dozing, a little bit, just based on connections. And I know those horses training at Fairhill end up with a ton of bottom. So No Dozing stretching out too, but has run some races I thought were pretty darn impressive. And is another I'd put on my tickets. I don't know what to do with Classic Empire, to be honest with you. I mean, I inclination is to bet against, but the old defensive save might not be the worst idea either.
So you didn't get me. Let me get a chance. I'm granted I talked a lot about Classic Empire, but I didn't get a chance to talk about the horse I like in here, which is the one that Jonathan mentioned first. Number 3, Singing Bullet. If you look at from a pedigree standpoint, who is the best bred, especially the best bred to go two turns as a two-year-old in a graded stakes race? It's got to be Singing Bullet. Hard spun out of Life at 10. I mean, that is an amazing pedigree right there. That is a route pedigree. And yet this horse won in the debut, sprinting, and showed speed. I mean, Dale Romans is not the kind that you think of for two-year-olds debuting sprinting to win first out. He only wins about 10% with all first-time starters in sprints. It's about 11% with two-year-olds. The ROI is less than a buck. But when he takes them in the second career start and goes sprint to route, just in general with all of them, with two-year-olds, he wins at a 22% rate. 215 ROI. With the ones who won their debut in the first start, it's even better. I mean, it's ridiculous. With all runners, it's not just two-year-olds. He's 5 for 11. 5 for 12. And two of those were in graded stakes. Go Maggie Go earlier this year. Christina's Journey in the Pocahontas a few years ago. This is a horse who showed talent first out, and I absolutely expect to get better going longer in the second start.
With Life at 10 in the pedigree, just watch out for the late gate scratch. Oh, never mind. All right,
or the non-effort, the head-scratching non-effort, but that'll come in the Breeders' Cup.
Next is race 9 at Keeneland. It's the Shadwell Turf Mile. Mike, we'll keep it with you. What are your thoughts on this race?
This is probably the most interesting race of the Keeneland card. I mean, you could go in the most wide open race of any of them. You could probably make a case for just about every horse in this field. In fact, even one of the longest shots in the race is going to be number 3, Tower of Texas, and was only a half length behind Teppan last out. So It's an amazing field. It's a very, very interesting race. If you're playing multis, and maybe if you're thinking like Jonathan, and singling a horse like Classic Empire and singling a horse like Teppan, this is the race where you want to try and use as much of your bankroll to spread as deeply as possible, in my opinion.
If you had to give a selection, who would it be?
Well, you know, I mean, I think the question for me comes back to the duo of Mondialiste and Casaqui. I mean, they were a neck apart in Arlington Million. And if you think Mondialiste is a player in here, then absolutely Casaqui is a player at a much bigger price. He's the value of the race, but I'm not sure that field is as good as this field. So I'm still kind of working things out. I think probably your most likely winner, if he runs a repeat of either of his last two races, is Tourist, but he's probably your favorite too. And he's drawn a little outside. I don't know. Even a horse like Ring Weekend, I think, is a big player in here. I'm generally against Miss Temple City. I'll let her prove it to me. I think the field she beat, even though she beat Tourist in that in Makers 46, I think this is a stronger race here. So
she's my top pick.
Is she?
I can't not bet her. Yeah, I mean, I, within seconds, I'd say, of the Ballston Spa running, I think I had about 14 text messages saying, what the heck was Drayden Van Dyke doing there? And for me, it just becomes obviously the thought, you know, I always got super stung in that race. Props to our colleague, Matt Bernier, who had Strike Charmer right on top that day. But for me, I was thickly alive in very good things to the to who I perceived as the three logicals in that spot, one of whom was Miss Temple City. And I just thought off the mistimed ride with the, you know, her resume speaks for itself to me. I mean, she's super fast. She loves it here. And she's just like sort of an auto bet for me. I agree with the inclination to maybe spread around a little bit here that Mike was espousing. But for me, clearly in the top bracket, I have Miss Temple City. What do you think, JK?
I think I might have to go to the airport. If I get to see this race live, Teppan live, I might have to get over to Lexington.
We are up in the air. Just divert the, you know, get out of the holding pattern and go straight to Lexington. They'll make room on the airfield for your private plane.
This is a hell of a race. You know, and I actually agree with Mike. I like Tower of Texas, and not so much because, you know, he ran so close to Teppan, but I just thought that his race was just good. I thought he showed he was game. He split horses, and I thought he ran well. So that'd be one that I would definitely be interested in. But it's what a view for me. I love this horse. I think that horse is – I think he's special. I think that, you know, he's had some really impressive races the last year. You know, obviously the layoff is a concern, and where has he been and why has he been there? But I think it shows a little bit of confidence to put him on a plane for a grade one. I'm going to put Mike on the spot and have him do some work for me because he's got back-end access. But I'm curious, and I can guarantee you it's impressive what Kent's record is since Del Mar started on the turf. I guarantee it's gaudy. I just don't know what it is because I don't have it in front of me. But if maybe Mike a little bit later can look it up and tweet it. But I bet it's pretty special. He's riding unbelievably on the turf. And he's going to be on the front end. And if he's the good Kent, he's going to be tough to beat.
Certainly seems like one of you will be out there winging, not necessarily a ton of other pace signed on. Definitely one that would be in my spreads as well. What are we knowing and seeing about weather at in Lexington tomorrow? And then we'll use that to pivot to talk about what's going to be going on weather-wise in New York. Are either of you guys up to speed on this, or do I need to do a little bit of quick digging?
I believe there's no issues.
Yeah, I think it's going to be beautiful.
Beautiful in Keeneland, but not New York.
New York shouldn't be too bad.
Really? I was checking earlier in the week with the, you know, I'm running this half tomorrow. It was like 70% rain, and then when I checked later, it was 40% rain. So if that has dropped, that's would be a very happy thing, especially for me in the morning, and also for all us horse players in the afternoon.
I think a lot of that uncertainty was based on what might happen with the hurricane. But the word is, the latest I've heard is that that's going to start going off out into sea, and we're going to miss the brunt of it. But
that's
you know, obviously,
I've heard all day.
Yeah, that stuff can change, but you know, we might get a little rain, but I don't think we're going to get dumped on.
That's huge. All right, let's
and Jonathan, I have the answer for you. So, since the middle of July on the turf, Kent DeSormo is 15 for 77, 283 ROI. That's 19% win rate. If you want me to add in any sort of distance, I can do so. Do you want routes exclusively?
Yeah, do routes real quick. That's still pretty good, but I was hoping it would be sexier.
I know you like the sexy. It is pretty good. I know you like the sexy, so let's see what we can come up with. Actually, it drops a little bit. 16%, 11 for 67, 183 ROI, which means those sprints he's been knocking it dead. So sprints since the middle of July on the turf, 4 for 10, 952 ROI. Wow.
He must have had a bomb or something. Yeah,
he must have. Well, 4 for 10 is pretty good though.
Yeah, he's riding well. So, and if I'll let him treat this one like a sprint, just go to the front. I don't care.
That is certainly the strategy you'd think he'd be employing. All right, let's talk Belmont. What do we got left in the show here? This live thing's throwing me off. My hosting is suffering a little bit. But we're good. We've got almost a half an hour. Got a question.
And there's only about 15 horses to talk about, so we're all right.
That's not a bad point, Mike. These Belmont Stakes did not come up to be a card that you dream about, I hate to say. You know, it'll still be some fun stuff, and we could still find bets, but not exactly full fields. Let's start with the Frisette. Mike, we'll go with you. Did you have a thought on who's going to win this one?
Isn't it Todd Pletcher's world? 2-year-old grade one at Belmont. I would imagine one of his two. Does he have two in here? I forget. He only has the one. Yeah, Nona Mela. I think Nona Mela towers over the field. you know, if she repeats that last effort, they're all running for second. I'm generally kind of against Christophe Clement. And maybe this horse is just really, really good. But, you know, at least in the last 5 years, Christophe Clement surprisingly has not won a graded stakes race with a two-year-old.
That is surprising that was, for a guy who wins with a lot of a two-year-old first-time starters.
He's 0 for 10. His lone in the money finish was a distant third in the Jessamine back in 2013. He's been out of the money 9 of 10 times, out of the money at 2 to 1, at 4 to 5 with Welcoming, at 3 to 2 with Saratoga Dreamer. He had Joust, who was out of the money earlier this year, and the Ms. Grillo, Blue Pigeon, Frostmourne just the other day. Remember last year, Width and the Frisette in this very race was 2 to 1 second choice, I think. It's just not Christophe's game, and he's competing against somebody whose game it is in Todd Pletcher. So of those two, that's who I'd lean more heavily on. I did want to quickly mention number 5, Star Super, partly because he was co-bred by a buddy of mine, Rocco Baldelli, who's very excited about her running in here. And her maiden win at Laurel was actually pretty impressive. And there were 3 next out winners, 2 others that ran second from that race. Every horse she beat in that race went and improved their buyer figure next start, which tells me it's a race that looks better, is better than it looks on paper. I don't know if she's good enough. She's going to be a huge price, but there's a possibility that if she just goes, all the other runners think, oh, this is a ridiculous long shot. Let's let her go. And she maybe takes them quite a far distance and who knows what happens.
Maybe a candidate for verticals. And that reminds me, Mike, I do have to get Rocco on the show at some point to talk baseball and horse racing. That would be a lot of fun. For me, the question with number 4, Yellow Agate, the Clement runner you were referencing before, I'm excited. A little bit later today, we're going to be – oh, that's right. There are people listening live, so I can actually plug this properly. At 11 o'clock Eastern time today, we're going to be doing a webinar about this very Belmont card with Maggie Wolfendale and Mike Beer. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm very curious to talk to Maggie about her notes on Yellow Agate to see how cranked this filly looked first out and see how she thinks she's going to do with the added distance today and with that start under her belt. I hear your trepidation about those Clement stats, but I wouldn't be too quick to chuck her out depending on some other information that maybe we can glean from Maggie in a little bit. JK, what did you come up with in the Frisette?
Sky Gesture. Thought the rail was dead last time that win. Gets Mike Smith, who I think there's no secret of my fandom, Mike Smith. Simple. It's not the most intriguing race, to say the least, but I would, you know, she'd be the type that I'd single and see what happens. Tis Now, should like to stretch out. That's where I'm at.
You think a wire job there, I presume, from the rail with Smith and the Irons?
Yeah, I would hope so. He better go somewhere from down there.
All right, the 5th race is the Kelso Grade 2 going a mile. JK, we'll keep it with you.
I want Tommy Macho. I'm going to butcher this stat, but you can tweet Nick if you want to know what it is. But Nick is always he was a big proponent for Todd Pletcher being bad with the graded stakes races, like first off. But he's like turned that around recently, and he's like now he's good at it. It's like he's like changed something in the last few years. And so I've always thought Tommy Macho was a good horse. All the other horses have disappointed me way too much for me to like really try to lean on someone here. So I'm going to go with Tommy Macho on the outside. Like Mike said, it's Todd Pletcher's world. We're all just living in it. So hopefully Todd got him ready to run off the break. Doesn't feel like they're pointing him anywhere else. So let's let this be the win. If he's 6-1, I'll be happy about that.
That was my pick as well. Mike, who did you come up with?
I'm a little interested in Point Piper, who's a horse that I've liked for a while. He's well bred. He's actually amazingly bred for the turf, but he's turned into a pretty decent dirt horse. And Hollendorfer has realized that he's probably not going to win too many graded stakes in California. So he's kind of taken him on a national tour. That Long Acres Mile was really good, and it's come back live with 3 next out winners from 4 to run. He set the track record in that race as well, which is notable because the Emerald track has been around for a little while. I think he just could be a good horse, and you know, this is a field that doesn't really excite me all that much. So
we got
in Hollendorfer, we trust.
We got a question about Bacello, the number three, specifically about what we thought about this quick wheel back from David Jacobson. Mike, did you have a chance to look into those numbers at all by chance?
I can look at it real quick while we discuss. I mean, in general, I think the question about is general about wheel backs with any horse. My answer is I look to the trainer. If the trainer never does it or doesn't have success doing it, then I tend to feel like this is a little bit of a reach. And you know, maybe after the last race, they didn't get what they wanted, so they want to get another start in. This is Jacobson's MO. I mean, of any trainer, with the exception of Jaime Mejia, who seems to only want to run within 10 days of every start, Jacobson regularly runs back within 7 days. 217 runners in the last 5 years have run within a week of the prior start. He wins 26% of those races. It's only $1.50 ROI because a lot of these Jacobson horses get bet. So of any trainer, he's the one I would trust to do something like this. Granted, he doesn't do it very often in graded stakes. He's only 0-2 in the last 5 years, the most notable being Salutos Amigos in the Breeders' Cup sprint a couple years ago. But if you like him and you want to make a case for just tossing that last start, the short wheelback wouldn't concern me.
JK, what are your thoughts in this race?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. He does that. He wheels horses back. It's weird. You know, just kind of from like, you know, that kind of that marathon distance cutting back. But, you know, he's the type of horse that if you have interest in him, he's one that I would definitely include. Doesn't feel like he's good enough, but you're going to get paid to find out. I mean, if he's not the longest shot on the board, I think he will be. I mean, I think Ocean Knight will take money just because that horse always takes money. But
The cutback was something else I wanted to talk a little bit more about. If you view right. that as a positive, I mean, that's a pretty extreme version.
Go ahead, Mike.
Well, I do, because he hadn't proven himself really beyond 9 furlongs. And I think that last race, Jacobson was just figuring, well, let's see how far he wants to go. You know, he set the pace and then he tired and finished out of the money. And Jacobson said, okay, I guess he's not a, 13 furlong horse, so let's cut him back to a mile. He's done well at the mile. He's done well at eight and a half furlongs, at the 9 furlongs. So it wouldn't surprise me if he runs well here.
13-8 doesn't really get me going when it comes to cutbacks. It's one of those I don't even know what the hell that means. Like, it doesn't, you know, 13-8. The cutbacks that get me excited are, you know, 10-7, or you know what I mean, or 8-6.
If this was a marathoner who had regularly proven that he does well at those distances, and then there's the cutback, I'd be a little bit more skeptical. But
right.
I think it was just, let's see how far he wants to go. And then I answered that question. Let's cut him by.
All right, let's move on to the Flower Bowl. Another grade one, 1.25 mile. Super duper interesting race. I alluded to my feelings about the last time we saw Lady Eli on a race course. I was sort of surprised as I looked this over, even with another horse that I love, C. Khaleesi, in here. I was really liking Lady Eli's chances and thinking of putting most of my multi-race play through her. What do you think, Jonathan?
Oh, man, I want her to win, and I think she can win. I'm not sure it's the best wagering proposition, but if you put if I had to make a selection, which I guess I have to.
You do.
C. Khaleesi. I would take C. Khaleesi. I think she's really good. And, you know, I just think that Lady Eli is going to be bet. And if you can get 5-2 on C. Khaleesi, I think that's legitimate. I'll be cheering for Lady Eli, and I probably won't even participate in the race so that I don't have that conflict. But I think that they'll run 1-2. I think both of them are really good, and I think Lady Eli's got a reason to improve. And I think C. Khaleesi might be the best female turf horse in Chad Brown's barn.
My case really was just, again, having to do with the dynamics in the Ballston Spa and the thought that maybe Lady Eli's run was not that efficient, and maybe C. Khaleesi, good as she was, as much as I loved her in the Beverly D, just had like such a great setup. I thought there was a chance the tables could turn. Obviously, I'm not going to get beat by C. Khaleesi. I was just surprised when I handicapped the race at how much Lady Eli I wanted to use here. Mike, what about you?
I'm sort of with Jonathan that I think Lady Eli is the one that I absolutely want to win, and I think she has a good chance to win, but I think she's probably not the best bet because it's a pretty wide open field. And while I feel like she obviously needed that last race and she could possibly move forward, there's a chance that she could also take a step back, you know, and first start off a long layoff with all the issues that she had to deal with. Sometimes horses regress in the second start, and so she's probably the most likely winner, at least in my heart. She's the one I want to win, but I wouldn't be relying on her too heavily. I'll probably just watch, and if I was going to take a shot at all, it might be a horse like Sentiero Italia, who was maybe a little up close to the rabbit and ran on well and in the third start as a 4-year-old, could very well move forward here.
Two real quick things. Sentiero Italia better go to the front or Joel will be getting cursed on Twitter. I guarantee it. I can think of one person who will be cursing him. I'm completely against Strike Charmer off that setup that she got last time with no real reason to suggest she's going to improve now. You have that reason with Lady Eli. And the second thing is I lied. I don't ever watch races. I'll at least bet the damn double. If they're running in a circle, I don't pass. I'll just bet the double or do something.
I was going to say perhaps it was the altitude up in the plane affecting you, but who are you and what have you done with Jonathan Kinchin? So I'm glad you righted the plane, as it were. Let's talk Belmont Turf Sprint, Jonathan. You're talking about playing doubles coming out of the sixth race, presumably using the outside team for Chad. Who are you going to link them to in race seven?
I'm not going to tell you who I think is going to win this race because I really don't know. But I will tell you this. I do think that Long on Value is going to win the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. So I am watching this race with hope that he runs second or third and is enough that they send him out there and run, because I really, 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 really believe that he's going to win the Turf Sprint.
So you've given us the exacta. You said undrafted couldn't be out of the exacta, and Long on Value can't lose. So
that race is
done. One race, we just crossed that one off the handicapping chores list.
We don't even got to talk about it. It's over.
How about tomorrow? Give me a pick for tomorrow.
Long on Value. The horse is legit. I think he's legit. I think he wants a little bit longer, but I thought he wanted a little bit longer, and I actually thought, what the hell is Bill Mott doing when he cut him back in the lucky coin and he won going away into a slow pace?
That's why he's Bill Mott and you're not, Jonathan.
Exactly. And you're 100% right. And I really think that he is – Bill deserves a lot of credit by – deciding to put this horse – to cut this horse back after being a graded stakes winner going long. So he's my pick tomorrow and my pick for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint.
This is what he's always wanted to do. I love him. We've talked about him a lot on the show. I missed him that day too, JK, and felt foolish afterwards. But for me, it's Long on Value. But if you made me give a top pick in here, number 5, Pure Sensation, I wouldn't sleep on for all the obvious reasons. The old, form horse other best horse in the race. I'm going to get real skinny here in my multis and try to get away with those two. Mike?
You guys are a lot more confident in this race than I am. There's a number of different contenders that I can see. I mean, I think Long on Value is good and is getting good at the right time, but I just wonder if this is the trip he wants and if this is the goal. As Jonathan said, they're looking to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. He has every right to use this race as a little bit of a tightener. And it's only been 3 races, but notice he hasn't won at Belmont on the turf. So I think he's a contender, but I wouldn't lean too hard. I would try and spread if you could. The one that intrigues me a bit is number 9, Ready for Rye, who I think might be better on the turf, or at least his dirt races have been better on the wet dirt. And Pete, are you typing?
I am.
You're typing. You're a very loud typer, man.
Sorry. I'm trying to keep the people happy. They're asking questions that I don't want to loop back and have to do with 3 races left and 10 in the show. I'll have to figure that out for another time. I wasn't thinking. I'm probably typing on top of the microphone. Apologies. We're getting used to this whole live thing.
Fair enough. Anyway, Ready for Rye, I think, will run an improved race. It's interesting to me that he showed up here and that they're targeting probably the turf sprint for him. The other one, from a pace standpoint and from a horse that's just never run a bad race and is certainly stepping up in class, but in these turf sprints, sometimes good horses, they just improve when they get tested against better. Number eight, Pool Winner. I wouldn't discount him at a long price. You know, he seemingly, all he wants to do is sprint on the turf, and he could be out there on the lead early. And what, 15 to 1, I like it.
All right, we got three races left and just under 10 minutes. So we don't have to rush, but we do have to, you know, pick up the pace a little bit here. Race eight at Belmont is the Grade One Champagne. Another mile on the dirt. What are you thinking, Mike? Who are we gonna keep our multis going with in this race?
Oh, well, geez. I mean, Syndergaard's probably what, if he runs anything like his last two starts, they're all running for second, right? But he's gonna be probably odds on in this spot. You know, so I don't know to what extent you either single him. Or you toss him and you spread. You know, he's going to be tested now, first time out of state bred company. Maybe he just is a freak. You know, he's got the right trainer to win this race. It's interesting that, you know, maybe it's a Rapoli call, but Todd's got another one in here. I don't know. I'm inclined, just because I'm a contrarian, to kind of play against him. The one that intrigues me a little bit is number six, Big Gray Rocket for Bob Baffert. Looked really good last out. Was bet like he had already won the race in his debut, had some trouble, ran really well, validated that effort last out. The figure comes back a little low, but I think there's big things ahead for Big Gray Rocket. And I don't know if he'll get overlooked, but he'll be at least a square price as the third choice in a very short field.
As for me, I'm just hoping Syndergaard the equine meets a better fate than Syndergaard the human did the other night. JK, who is it in the Champagne?
Oh, Big Gray Rocket. He, for, you know, I report star, he worked with Lord Nelson from the gate. And anytime you get a two-year-old working with a horse that we've been arguing on Twitter about is going to be favored in the sprint is something I think is pretty impressive. And we know we've already had this conversation in the last few months about Baffert shipping dirt horses out west, from west out east. So I don't really think there's much more to talk about there. I think the Big Gray Rocket is the most likely winner here. Obviously, he needs to improve a little bit on form, but he's the young horse. He's doing something different. I think that he probably can.
Frank Fletcher over Todd Pletcher.
There it is.
Question for you, Jonathan. Do they let you, when you go through airplane security, do they let you bring the white Baffert wig? Is that safe to fly with? Can you have it on right now?
It is. It's under 3.5 ounces.
We didn't talk about favorable outcome much in here, JK. Are you going to use him at all?
This is one of those spots like where if it's not going to be my top pick, if it's not going to be the Big Gray Rocket, like I think it can be a bunch of other horses. And I feel like I'm gonna kill my equity by using all the other ones. So this is one of those spots where I'll just probably use Big Gray Rocket as an A horse, Syndergaard as a B horse, and if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. You know, rather than trying to cover all the situations, because Practical Joke makes sense, you know, Thirst for Victory doesn't make that much sense, but I could see it happen. You know, you can go in every different direction. So yeah, I'm with you on favorable outcome, but I'm gonna probably stay skinny in this spot.
I like it. Let's talk about the Hill Prince. Jonathan, we'll keep it with you. What do you think?
I signed a contract to bet Beach Patrol in the rest of his races. I thought that his race at Belmont in the Belmont Derby was so impressive, which led us to us. I'm saying us as in I know, Pete, you picked up a couple dollars that day, and I did as well in the Secretariat off of his trip in the Belmont Derby.
Yes.
And he hasn't shown me anything to have me go in a different direction. I think he's a really impressive horse. I thought he was impressive when D'Amato had him. I only thought he would get better when Chad got him. And that's my pick here is Beach Patrol.
Some other time, and we just don't have the time because we did so many races. You know, normally we do four races. We have time to talk about everything. I'd love to get into a conversation about trips, specifically involving the Saranac. And the question would just be who had the tougher trip between Inspector Linley and Camelot Kitten? Because I think you could have a pretty interesting debate about that. Unfortunately, we don't really have time for it now. Mike, do you like Beach Patrol like Jonathan, or are you going to pick one of the two that I just mentioned, or do you have yet another idea in here?
I'm with Jonathan here. Beach Patrol all the way for me. I mean, I don't know what it means. You know, read what you want into jockey bookings, but it's opening weekend at Keeneland. There's a lot of stakes races at Keeneland, and who is riding Beach Patrol for Chad Brown?
Mr. Giroux.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He's making the trip to ride this horse when he could very well get just about the pick of his mounts at Keeneland on a day where they've got five graded stakes. So that's notable to me. It's notable that Doug Bradar made that call. They clearly want him on him for the Breeders' Cup. You know, I think he's the best horse in the race. And if you're telling me, if I can believe the morning line, that he's not even going to be favored, then by all means, that's great. And one other thing to note, Long Island Sound, if you look in the running line, you'll see that he's italicized, which means he won his next start. Of course, that was overseas. So if you click on Formulator and you click in his PPs, you don't see it. But I pulled up. He won the Group 3 Paddy Power Diamond Stakes at Dundalk in September. So, you know, he validated that effort in the Secretariat.
A couple other next out winners in there as well. Yeah, for me, I'll make it 3 for 3. Beach Patrol, I probably would save a little bit with Camelot Kitten. Let's move on to the Jockey Club Gold Cup. We just have a couple minutes left on the show today. Not the most thrilling renewal in this race's storied history. Matt Bernier, I know, been doing cartwheels over the fact that his boy, Hopportunity, shows up here. Once again, he gets to see his two horses, Hopportunity and FNX, run together. I'm sure the vibes are just probably beaming out of his cube at the DRF offices, Mike, huh?
You know, I haven't talked to him about it. But I would imagine what he might say is, boy, Hopportunity sure picked the wrong spot to ship into, because there's no pace in this race, right?
Well, I think he's just such a grinder. I don't think he needs – I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but to me he's a horse that could just get in the race a little bit earlier if he had to and grind. Some of the reason he's so far back is some of the pace is being set in these races. Maybe I'm wrong, but, I mean, you know, he's running against California Chrome, and that's part of the reason why he's been so far back. I just assume he'll be closer and look to grind this out.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe, but you know, you got to think. You would have hoped that there was at least some confirmed front runner to kind of help set it up. I just don't know if anybody comes back to the field. I think maybe FNX and Protonico go, and they just lope around the track and probably run 1-2, and nobody really makes up much ground. But I could be wrong.
Not impossible. JK, where do you stand on that?
I'm protesting this race.
Protesting?
My East Coasters are going to get mad at me for saying this is the worst grade one ever, especially being a California guy, because I'm sure that there's some grade ones on the West Coast
see,
that have been a little embarrassing.
Did you see the race's Melatonin won earlier this year, John?
That's why I'm apologizing. Protonico for me on the rail, wire to wire. I mean, I guess FNX could wire the field if they use the same tactics they used in the Breeders' Cup with sending him to the front, which I would imagine that's what they will do. But I'll never bet that horse at 7-5. I just won't. So Protonico for me, he'd be the one I'd use in tournaments. He'd be the one I would use defensively, and you know, the rest of them all make sense. I mean, I don't move to Hege makes sense. It just depends on who's going to be ridden accordingly. Who's going to get a heads up ride? Who's going to get a ride that understands the pace scenarios? Who's going to win this race? Because none of them are really that good.
I'm glad that you did come through with a pick there. I hated to think for a storied race like the Jockey Club Gold Cup that you'd take a knee, Jonathan.
Punting on third down.
Exactly. We can't have that. We can't have that from you. All right. Well, we made it through these races. We have time for a quick final thought for the weekend, whether it's a spot play or just some other general thought coming up. Jonathan, you start.
I might go to the airport. Out to old Lexington and see if I can enjoy some of this weather and watch Teppan run Our friend Pipes today, he's the jockey agent for Angel Cruz, is riding in a grade one today for Grand Motion. So let's bring him home.
That filly can run for Tim Keefe, that filly?
Yes.
Where is that?
It's in the Alcibiades at Keeneland.
Oh, that filly's in the Alcibiades. Oh my goodness, I totally missed that. Very cool. Good stuff for Pipes, who I affectionately refer to as one of the boys from L.A., Lower Albany, who we hang out with all summer at the Paddock Bar. Mike, closing thoughts.
Well, if you're listening live, tune in about 40 minutes to Mike Beer, Maggie Wolfendale, Pete, and I covering this Belmont card again. That should be fun. I'm excited that today is opening day for Keeneland. It's one of my favorite meets of the year.
Going to have a lot of fun. Looking forward to joining you later, Mike. Want to say thank you to Mike Hogan. Thank you to Jonathan Kinchin. Thank you to the pilot taking Jonathan Kinchin around Texas. Good work today. Thanks most to all of you, especially those of you listening live. We're going to experiment with this, and if I can learn to type a little quieter, it'll work better. But I do see a future for the live podcast. They will also still be posting as normal through all of the usual channels, so you can access them as you will. If you're playing the races this weekend, I hope you win all your photos.